Just possible, and we're not quite sure how, that some of you may at this point not have seen the astronauts before today. And if any of you are terribly concerned where Mike Collins' mustache is, you are correct. It is not just getting late, it is gone. It was shaved off sometime between yesterday's news conference and the time the astronauts arrived in New York City today. We're not quite sure who took exception to it, whether it was Mike Collins himself and the itching, whether it was his wife or his children, but it is now gone. Much, I might say, to the regret of a small poll that we have taken. We all thought he looked very good in it. Tom, Peter Blythe was mentioning a moment ago when they were doing the dinner there that all the wines are from California, but in fact, there has been a kind of precedent breaking at the White House in terms of wines, hasn't there?
Not for this dinner. This dinner is the one, of course, they were referring to, and this does feature strictly California wines, as you know, Peter, but at the White House, one of the first things the president did was order a change from the Johnson administration in the serving of French wines, this in an effort to break away from the old Johnson tradition. Plus, he felt that it might just possibly help relations with French President de Gaulle at that time, just prior to the president's visit to Europe. The astronauts have taken shelter from the ticker tape here in the Los Angeles ballroom at the Central Plaza Hotel, where they're about midway through a very fancy seven-course dinner. Our correspondent there is Sam Donaldson. Sam, where do they stand in the serving of that seven-course dinner at this point? Are they about through?
Yes, at the moment the lettuce is being removed. And next we have an assortment of things. There you see the president, by the way, going back to the head table. He's been table hopping a little bit, as have all the other people at the head table. Now he's rejoining Mrs. Nixon, who, as far as I can tell, stayed right there. I wasn't watching every moment, but it seemed to me that she never left the head table. It simply sat there while everyone else went table hopping.
I'm glad to see, gentlemen, that our feelings watching on the monitor about the astronauts has been borne out. We've just had a note from Julian Scheer of NASA, who was at the astronaut side all day, and he said that they, in fact, did start the day in a fairly bashful, reticent way, but, and we're quoting Julian now, that by the end of the day, they were acting like politicians and shaking every hand in sight. So perhaps they will not have as much difficulty in the future getting used to being heroes as they perhaps anticipated they were going to have yesterday at that news conference when they said their private lives really depended on us. This is anything but a private dinner. Sam, we had all been wondering with great anticipation whether or not Lucky Lindbergh was going to be there. Has anybody seen him?
I haven't. I don't know where he's sitting. We don't have a very accurate table listing. They tried to give us a listing of the center section of the Los Angeles room, but they never got the listings for the other. I've been looking out. I see Tricia and Julie Eisenhower with David sitting at a table with Bob Hope. Tricia isn't at that table, but Julie and David Eisenhower are. But I haven't seen him.
Former Vice President Humphrey, we see here.
Just back from a trip to Russia.
Yes, in fact, there, and was able to report to us during the course of the Apollo 11 mission that the astronauts, that's Senator Barry Goldwater on the left, talking to Governor Reagan, and that's Mrs. Reagan in that long white dress with her hair swept way, way back.
Sam, it seems to be noticeable by their absence, any members of the Kennedy administration. Have you seen any of the former Kennedy men there?
No, I have not, but then again, I'm not certain they aren't here. We do have an accurate listing of the people who are here. There are 1,360 names. By the way, I'm told that Lindbergh's name is not on the latest guest list, so presumably he sent his regrets.
He is a man, of course, who shuns publicity and has shunned publicity except really in the areas of conservation, his specific interest in the last few years, and so it's not totally, completely not understandable that he has stayed away in the final days.
Peter Flanagan, one of the president's top assistants.
Once again in his white dinner jacket, Barry Goldwater. The dinner seems, Sam, to be becoming a little calmer than it was a while ago, and yet the main activity is yet to become. That's going to begin with the president, I gather. Sam, are you there?
I think one reason the dinner is calmer is because we are a little far removed from that very stirring entry with the Herald trumpets, and then in a few minutes we had the Drum and Bugle Corps, the United States Marine Corps band. That also was very stirring. People were table hopping just a little bit. The president and the astronauts have gone on the floor. And now they're struggling through, if I may use that word, this tremendous dinner. I don't see how anyone can eat it.
What are these
the food
little,
is perfect.
What are these little things we see here, Sam? Look like desserts.
Oh,
with
that's
flag.
The Claire de Lune. It is a very special dessert. And I think in a few minutes we're going to show you the pastry chef who created it especially for this dinner. We'll let him tell you what's in it. But it's an original creation. The Century Plaza Hotel, by the way, is very proud of the fact, at least it claims this fact, that this type of dinner is routine for it. Now, it's the first state dinner here, but they claim that they can handle 1,600 people on any given night with very short notice. And they also want it known that all of their other restaurants and hotel facilities are open tonight.
It is a fairly new hotel in Los Angeles. Senator George Murphy from California, that is, sitting at a table with his family and wife.
Peter, why don't I go ahead and let us look at this Claire de Lune dessert since we've been talking about it. The most demanding work in the Century Plaza kitchens this week has been in the pastry kitchen, where executive pastry chef Ernest Mueller has been designing and executing works of art that will sweeten any palate.
Mr. Mueller, you're the executive pastry chef here, and you are responsible for all of the desserts. What are these creations?
Well, these are actually showpieces we made especially for the astronauts to be put in their rooms.
What are they made out of?
They're made out of pastillage or gum paste that is powdered sugar and egg white and gelatin. And you actually work it to a real stiff dough, and then you roll it out and form it the way you want it.
But, of course, they're not to be eaten.
No, it's more only a showpiece.
Let's see, we have one for Collins and one for Armstrong and one for Aldrin.
They are filled with candies, of course. You can remove the upper half of the globe, and they are filled with candies, and special candies we made. We call it moon rocks.
We'll see them in a minute.
Right.
What's this?
Well, we made this especially for the president. It's a candy box. It's purely made out of gum paste. It's the same way.
With the great
and,
seal on
right,
the
right.
top. Now let's take a look at the moon rocks.
Right. They're not so expensive as the ones they brought back from the moon. They are eatable. I hope everybody likes them.
May I try one?
Certainly. Please go ahead. It's a little bit dust. We try to go as close as possible to the real ones. So it's a little bit dust on it, but that's cocoa powder, of course.
You're very good. Tastes
Thank
a little
you.
Like cocoa or...
And mint.
Mint, yes.
Right. Yes. Now, most of the work is done to prepare the candies and the pedipures. We figured out that we need around 5,000-6,000 candies and pedipures. And everything is done by hand. Everything is done individually. It's no machine use. It's no possibility to use a machine for work like this.
Mr. Mueller, you've created a special dessert for the dinner. What is it?
We call it Claire de Lune.
What's it made of?
It is a French vanilla ice cream. And it is surrounded by a meringue. Meringue is made out of egg white and sugar. And the inside is a soft marzipan filling with in kirsch-soaked raisins. And I would like to show you that. So, that will stay soft even if it is frozen, because there's quite some liquor in. And on the side of the whole dessert, we serve blackberry sauce with blackberry brandy.
I've seen so much food being prepared today for this dinner, and this dessert comes at the end. Will you be disappointed if the guests don't have room for it?
Well, I really would be disappointed, and I don't think it will happen.
Executive pastry chef Ernest Mueller. Peter?
Some wag in the studio here, Sam, couldn't avoid commenting, and I think with some amusement that our rocket experts now and our pastry chefs happen at this moment to be German. ABC's coverage of the Astronaut State's dinner will resume right after this message.
Peter, I'd like to begin by making a correction on a report we had earlier. Apparently, we had some bad information about the demonstrators, the size of the demonstrators outside the Century Plaza. Instead of 3,000, there are more like 300 or 400. And we're told the protest demonstration there has largely fizzled. It is, of course, still peaceful, and police are standing by to make sure there's no trouble. Inside, in the Los Angeles ballroom, they are down to the dessert course, as we saw just a moment ago. being served now, these special Clair de Lune desserts, an original creation for this state dinner honoring the Apollo 11 astronauts, the climax and conclusion to their day of celebration here in Los Angeles.
I don't know how much speculation we should risk at this moment, Tom, but the lights in the Los Angeles room, as President Nixon sits pensively, perhaps thinking about the remarks he will make in just a few moments to the astronauts on behalf of the nation, the lights have been dimmed, and this could be an indication that there is going to be some kind of flaming dessert somewhere. That's usually what dim lights herald in a large banquet like this.
I wish you could be right, but no flame here tonight. I think it was something that the Los Angeles Fire Department insisted on, or certainly this hotel would have created it. We are going to have in the desserts the Clair de Lune, fruits from California, thin wafers, and water crackers, and that's about it. And, of course, then the champagne will come. Earlier this evening, Jules Bergman talked to Charles Conrad and Chris Kraft at our reception that preceded the dinner. And let's see that interview now.
With us here tonight, we have Christopher Kraft, the director of flight operations at the Manned Spacecraft Center, one of the men who sweated out these 8 years that led up to Apollo 11, and Commander Pete Conrad, the spacecraft commander on the forthcoming Apollo 12 flight, currently slated to fly in mid-November. Pete, what's your impression this evening?
Well, it's quite an evening. Everybody's here that I haven't seen for months.
Well, you've been off training.
Plus a few that I don't know.
Chris, did you ever think we'd get here so soon?
Well, I had my doubts at times about the soonness of it, but I never had any doubt that we'd be able to do it. I thought maybe we might have to fly one or two more flights before we actually landed, but I think we planned it pretty well, I guess, and it came off as everybody hoped it would.
Pete, well, we're celebrating the great epic triumph of Apollo 11. You and Al Bean and Dick Gordon are busy off training for Apollo 12. That's only about 3 months away. What are your primary goals there?
Well, the primary goals are to do the double EVA, deploy the ALSAP package, do the geology on, of course, extended EVA from Apollo 11, and hopefully we'll make the spot landing next to Surveyor 3 and get something off of that also, which would be a bonus.
The way you put it is the really key goal of the flight is pinpoint precision landing next to Surveyor 3 on this new landing site 7.
No, the primary objective is to get ALSAP out and
the lunar surface experiment.
That's right, and the mission objective is to work on the techniques to make the spot landing. And if we get it all right on this flight, we'll land next to Surveyor 3. But, of course, we're building up for the later flights where you do have the pinpoint accuracy and we can stick it in a crater or whatever the scientists want is a very accurate landing site.
Will we get pinpoint accuracy, Pete, do you think?
Well, we're working on it, and I really don't know the answer to that. I think we know the answers. Chris knows them better than I do to where the errors came up in Apollo 11. We're working on that. We've changed our procedures a little bit, and I feel that we have a reasonable degree of getting within at least a mile. Now, that's probably not close enough to walk, but if we get within a mile targeting and we do our job, we may be able to fly over close enough to walk to it.
Chris, Neil and Buzz did a great job, but again, the issue comes up of can they get down, can Pete get down on 12, can Jim Lovell on Apollo 13 get down to a key landing, a pinpoint landing area? What do you think?
Well, I don't think there's any question that we'll be able to land on either 12 or 13 because the areas we're going into, the ellipse that we will be able to make, I think they'll be able to land within that area. Now, we're going to do the best we can with the navigation problems and with Pete flying the vehicle to some known landmark on the lunar surface. But I still think that it's going to be plus or minus a half a mile, as Pete said. And if we get closer than that, frankly, I think it'll be a little bit of luck. You got to recognize that navigation to within that close of, to a point on the lunar surface is better than we can do on the Earth. And we know a lot more about the Earth's gravitational field and the shape of the Earth than we do about the moon. So I think we're doing pretty well.
Right, a lot of people here tonight haven't even been able to find the Century Plaza Hotel.
Indeed. Yeah.
Good. Thank you very much, Pete Conrad and Chris Kraft.
Thank you.
Jules is the only one from ABC News who's allowed on the floor because he's an invited guest. And just as we were listening to that interview, the strolling strings, 42 pieces made up from the various services, have started to enter the ballroom, and they are now going to serenade the guests as they complete their desserts. Peter?
Well, Sam, as we all know, the Apollo 11 moon mission was seen not only here in the United States, but in the rest of North America and in good parts of the world. And we have just had a few moments ago what is going to be significantly good news for people in other parts of the world. Julian Scheer, who is the National Aeronautics and Space Administrator press officer, has announced that the three Apollo 11 astronauts will very shortly be going on a world tour. It will be sometime in the fall, and Julian Scheer has already anticipated, and perhaps again with some justification, that the reception they're going to receive overseas is going to be four times as great as it was here. If it is, that is going to be some strain, because today the receptions in New York, Chicago, and Los Angeles have something that we have ever yet to see topped. ABC's coverage of the astronaut state dinner will resume right after this message.
Today's activities for the astronauts certainly are in marked contrast to what they were doing just about 3 weeks ago when they were flying in practically complete solitude up there, just the three of them, traveling to the moon and then landing on the moon and then going into the quarantine period for 20 days and 20 hours where they saw only relatively very few people. And today they have seen millions along the parade routes in New York and also in Chicago, and whereas just a few weeks ago they were dining on tiny bite-sized cubes of food and eating and drinking from squeezed tubes and water guns, tonight in the Los Angeles ballroom at the Century Plaza Hotel in Los Angeles, it is champagne and clair de lunes and strolling violins.
Here from Los Angeles Ballroom, 23 U.S. Army men, 15 U.S. Air Force men, and 4 U.S. Navy musicians entertaining as dessert is being eaten. The waiters supposedly were to leave the room before the strings entered, but they're still there. Now pouring the champagne, I believe, in preparation for the end of the dinner and the formal toasts. The first toast will be by Governor Ronald Reagan of California. It will be, of course, the traditional toast to the President of the United States. The President then intends to respond, I'm told, for about 7 or 8 minutes in very off-the-cuff remarks.
And now a little Moon River. Thank you.
Peter and Sam, the president, as I'm sure you know, is very conscious of being a gracious host. He is most concerned at these occasions that the guests of the White House thoroughly enjoy themselves. And he does not like to rush through something. When he senses that everyone is enjoying the occasion, you can throw those pre-printed schedules out the window, because he will sit there all evening if the program is going along and the guests seem to be enjoying themselves. The president will wait until things get rather slow before he feels he needs to move into any organized program.
Now, the strange playing a collection of gypsy charters. Most appreciative audience for a collection of strings from the various services playing string music while we await the beginning of the official ceremonies at this state dinner tonight. And we will continue our coverage of the astronauts' state dinner in just 1 minute.
Back at the state dinner in the Los Angeles Ballroom in the Century Plaza Hotel in Los Angeles, just across the street from Beverly Hills. We're going to show you some of the people who are here this evening. We took their pictures earlier, during an earlier course of the banquet, and let's see them now and see if I can recognize them. The strolling string still on the floor here. After they depart, we're going to hear from the United States Army Chorus. Now, there's the head table, of course, Neil Armstrong. Buzz Aldrin. Being served earlier. There were four waiters selected to serve the president. One of them was going to be the lucky man. We weren't told who he was to be. Security was part of this, and I think ruffled feelings or the wish to avoid them was another part. The vice president, of course, the president earlier this evening, with the spray of roses and wildflowers, summer flowers and daisies on the table. Mr. Nixon clearly enjoying himself, waving to the audience, people that he recognizes, and that should be almost everyone here, because these are the people who are the power structure of the United States, if we ever had one. The Chief Justice of the United States, Warren Burger. Of course, we don't have anything that approximates the old British power structure of 500 people or so, but these are the people who would be the nearest thing we have to them. Now, this is the Army Chorus singing.
The stage is set for the trial.
Great surprise for us here as we listen to what is obviously a brand new composition called One Small Step for a Man, One Giant Leap for Mankind. ABC's coverage of the astronaut state dinner will resume right after this message.
Governor Reagan is now toasting the president. Let's listen.
Governors of 44 of the 50 states who are here with us tonight, Your Excellencies, ambassadors and representatives of so many nations in the world, gathered here tonight, as all of us have been gathered closer by the deed performed by the three men we honor here tonight. Members of NASA, fellow guests, all. It's a privilege, as one of the guests here at this dinner, to be able to welcome you to California. The people of California are honored by your presence here tonight. And all of us in California appreciate the opportunity of showing our pride in this great achievement, in this great stride forward for all of mankind. We know that our three guests of honors started the day under the ticker tape and the confetti in New York, where they stood and received the plaudits of the people of the Empire State. And then later in the day, we're in Chicago, where again they stood beneath the ticker tape and the confetti and watched the fireworks on the lakeshore. And we hope that in the days to come, they will recall that in California, we bid them sit down and we fed them and gave them to drink. Mr. President, we had thought here in California to present our honored guests with mounted commemorative medallions of our 200th anniversary, our bicentennial year here in California. They will be presented with those medallions, but our original idea of having them here at the dinner, we decided against it because we thought they might think it was a door prize won by virtue of being the guests who traveled the greatest distance to get here. But, Mr. President, there have been many firsts for our state in these two centuries. And now this first of a White House dinner outside the White House. You've chosen our state, and here we're allowed to participate in this, your first official recognition and greeting of this glorious achievement. We think here in California, there is no way to show our appreciation, to tell you only that our pride and our gratitude is such that California is in orbit, because this certainly must be the nicest birthday present California has ever received in 200 years. Ladies and gentlemen, will you join me in a toast to the President of the United States?
Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you, Governor Reagan, for that very gracious and generous welcome to California to our astronauts, and also to all of our guests who have come a long way, not as far as they have come, but a long way to this dinner. And before we make some of the official awards on this historic occasion, I thought that all of the people in this great audience here and those millions who are listening on television or seeing on television would like to know some of the people that are here. All should be introduced in this distinguished group. All cannot be. but I am sure that we should have some. And except for those that will later participate in the program, I wish that those that I will now name will stand, and their wives with them as they are named, so that those on television and those in this audience can know who have come to honor our astronauts. First, the Chief Justice of the United States and Mrs. Berger. The former Vice President of the United States and Mrs. Humphrey. There are 50 members of the House and Senate of the United States present. Will all of the members of the House and Senate of the United States and their wives please stand so that we may honor you? There has never been a White House dinner in which so many governors have been present, because there can only be 100 seated at a White House dinner, and there are 44 governors here present. Will the 44 governors and their wives please stand and be honored? Also, there are more members of the cabinet present than are usually present at a cabinet meeting. Will the 14 members of the cabinet please stand and be honored? And now, there are 83 countries represented here tonight by their ambassadors or other representatives. This is the greatest representation at a state dinner ever held in the United States of America. Will the 83 countries represented, the ambassadors and chargés, please stand and be welcome. Our astronauts had a great welcome in New York and later in Chicago and now in Los Angeles, and I can tell them that when they go abroad, they will also there receive a welcome, because Mrs. Nixon and I have just returned from a trip around the world. It took us to 8 countries in 9 days, and in every one of those nations, every country, the streets of Manila and Jakarta and New Delhi and Bangkok and Bucharest, wherever we went, the words, deeds, what the astronauts meant to the world, that was everything that we heard. And I do think that I do think of the moment, a very moving moment in Bucharest just a little over a week ago, when almost 1 million people were on the streets, and on the other side of the Iron Curtain, thousands of those people held up a picture of the 3 astronauts. This was certainly one way to bring the world together there in Bucharest, Romania, a week ago. Now tonight we honor 3 very brave men. They would be the first to tell us that what they achieved would not have been possible had it not been for the assistance they received from many thousands of others who will also be honored tonight, and also by others who preceded them in the work that now has reached the pinnacle of success. When we think of those who have gone before, it reminds us that the reason we can see further than those of yesterday is that we have the privilege sometimes of standing on the shoulders of the giants who have gone before us. Many giants have gone before these 3 great men we honor tonight. January 27, 1967 was a day that all Americans will remember, a day of sadness and a day of shock. But it is the day tonight that we wish to remember in a different way. On that day, 3 of the giants who made possible this achievement died. And the names of Grissom and White and Chafee will live forever in the annals of brave men brave men who, through their exploration and their sacrifice, made possible the magnificent achievement we honor tonight. And therefore, tonight, I would like to ask Dr. Payne, the director of NASA, to step forward and to read a citation to these three men, a posthumous award of NASA's highest decoration, the Distinguished Service Medal. Dr. Payne.
Citation for astronauts Grissom, White, and Chafee reads as follows. The National Aeronautics and Space Administration awards posthumously to Virgil I. Grissom, Edward H. White, and Roger B. Chafee the NASA Distinguished Service Medals for professional skill, courage, and dedication to duty in Project Apollo. They gave their lives in their country's historic undertaking to realize the goal of landing men on the moon and returning them safely to Earth.
Ladies and gentlemen, tonight in this audience are two very brave women. The men who explore the unknown are men of courage, and the women who stay behind, their wives, are gallant women, women of courage. And tonight, I would like to ask Mrs. Betty Grissom and Mrs. Pat White to step forward to receive the medals that their husbands have just been awarded. When we think of the achievements of our astronauts, we also are aware of what we have often been told by those who have been on flights before. And I recall that over and over again, the same theme runs through what they say. The theme is that it wouldn't have been possible except for all of those who worked on the ground. 400,000, perhaps over 400,000 men and women made possible the success of the space flights. And so tonight, we not only want to honor the men who made this great achievement, but we also want to honor those who helped them make it possible. And we are honoring them through a citation, a group achievement award, which will now be read, a citation by Dr. Payne.
The citation reads, the National Aeronautics and Space Administration presents the Group Achievement Award to the Apollo 11 Mission Operations Team for exceptional service in planning and exemplary execution of mission operational responsibilities for Apollo 11, the first manned lunar landing mission. The distinguished performance of this team was decisive in the success of the first extraterrestrial exploration mission, a major milestone in the advancement of mankind.
Anyone who has visited Houston or who's had an opportunity to visit some of the other installations of our space program is enormously impressed by the men and women who work in it. We're impressed by their intelligence, by their dedication, and when I was in Houston, I was greatly impressed by their youth. And the man that has been selected tonight to receive this Group Achievement Award for the whole 400,000 who in one way or another have contributed to the success of this program is a young man, 26 years of age. But Steve Bales, who was the flight control engineer on this project, made a critical decision just before Eagle landed on the Sea of Tranquility that could have made the difference between success or failure. And if he would step forward to receive this Group Achievement Award representing all of those on the ground who made the venture to the moon possible. This is the young man when the computer seemed to be confused and when he could have said stop or when he could have said wait, said go. And now we reach the moment in the day, a long day for our astronauts, which we've always been looking forward to here, and all the nation has been awaiting. When the nation tries in the highest way we know possible to honor these men for what they have done. And we are therefore awarding them tonight the Medal of Freedom, the highest civilian honor that we can present to an American citizen. And to read those citations, the Vice President of the United States, who is Chairman of the Space Council, will now come to the rostrum.
Mr. President, ladies and gentlemen, if these distinguished Apollo 11 astronauts will stand as their names are called, I will read the citation. Neil A. Armstrong. Colonel Michael Collins. Colonel Edwin E. Aldrin. Citation reads as follows. As members of the crew of the United States spacecraft Apollo 11, they participated directly in a unique and profoundly important adventure. The accumulated scientific knowledge and technological ability of mankind made man's first step on the moon practicable. The courage and skill of men like these made it possible. Their contribution to this great undertaking will be remembered as long as men wonder and dream and search for truth on this planet and among the stars.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, it says here, remarks by the president. Don't worry. I won't try to top what we have just witnessed and felt, but I do know that all of us here, even after a long day, would like to hear briefly from each of our astronauts.
Mr. President, here stands one proud American, proud to be a member of the Apollo team, proud to be a citizen of the United States of America, which nearly a decade ago said that it would land two men on the moon and then did so, showing along the way to the world both the triumphs and the tragedies. I'm proud to be an inhabitant of this most magnificent planet. As I looked at it from nearly a quarter of a million miles away 3 weeks ago, the people of New York, of Chicago, and of Los Angeles were far from my mind, frankly. But tonight, they're very close to my mind. I wish that each and every one of you could have been with us today to see their enthusiasm and the magnificent greeting which they gave us upon our return. And of course, now the Freedom Medal, I simply cannot express in words what that means to me, but I would like to say thank you very much.
Now, Colonel Aldrin. Thank you, Mr. President. I feel that the honor you have given us goes not just to us as a crew, but to countless thousands of others. Some are here tonight, many cannot be. It goes to hundreds of thousands of government and industry people who have strived over 8 long years on Apollo. Their success and the stepping stones of Apollo 7, 8, 9, and 10 gave us the opportunity to take Apollo 11 to the moon and land. It is an honor, in a sense, that goes to all Americans who believed, who persevered with us. Across this country today, we saw how deeply they believe. We saw it by their spontaneous enthusiasm and warmth of greeting for us. Our flight was your flight. We flew Eagle and Columbia with your hands helping us on the controls and your spirit behind us. When Neil and I saluted the flag, all Americans, I think, saluted it with us. We hope that the proud emblem of the American Eagle carrying the olive branch to the moon may inspire a new generation. The words you spoke to us, Mr. President, that incredible night on the moon, summed up many of the feelings we have felt today from the people of this great country. What Apollo has begun, we hope will spread out in many directions, not just in space, but underneath the seas and in the cities, to tell us unforgettably that we can do what we will and must and want to do. Never before have travelers been so far removed from their homelands as we were. Yet never before have travelers had so many human beings at their right hand. There are footprints on the moon. Those footprints belong to each and every one of you, to all of mankind. And they are there because of the blood, the sweat, and the tears of millions of people. These footprints are a symbol of the true human spirit. Thank you, Mr. President. And now, the first man to set foot on the moon, Neil Armstrong.
We were privileged to leave on the moon a plaque endorsed by you, Mr. President, saying, for all mankind. You too took a trip, as you pointed out, around the world, and carried that message to all mankind. Perhaps in the third millennia, a wayward stranger will read that plaque at Tranquility Base. Let history mark that this was the age in which that became a fact. I was struck this morning in New York by a proudly waved but uncarefully scribbled sign. It said, "Through you, we touched the moon." Through you, we touched the moon. It was our privilege today, across the country, to touch America. I suspect that perhaps the most warm, genuine feeling that all of us could receive came through the cheers and shouts and most of all the smiles of our fellow Americans. We hope and think that those people shared our belief that this is the beginning of a new era. The beginning of an era when man understands the universe around him, and the beginning of the era when man understands himself.
Please remain standing for a moment. Ladies and gentlemen, it is my high honor and privilege at this point to propose a toast. And in doing so, I want to say very simply to our three astronauts, we thank you for your courage. We thank you for raising our sights, the sights of men and women throughout the world, to a new dimension. The sky is no longer the limit. And we thank you, too, for the men that you are. You and all of your colleagues, what fine men, what fine examples to young America and young people all over the world. It has been my privilege in the White House and also in other world capitals to propose toasts to many distinguished people, to emperors, to kings, to presidents, to prime ministers, and yes, to a duke. And tonight, this is the highest privilege I could have, to propose a toast to America's astronauts. Let's raise our glasses to America's astronauts.
So this magnificent state dinner is over. The high point, clearly, the speeches by the astronauts, unrehearsed but very clear, very understandable. And the president and the vice president and the astronauts have left the stage. It was really an unflawed dinner. There was nothing to mar it that I could see, except I couldn't help thinking, when Michael Collins referred to it, of the one great absence here tonight. John Kennedy would have been out of office, of course, but he would have been here because he set us on the course to the moon, which was so successful and which has resulted here tonight in this state dinner honoring the first man to set foot on the moon. But though Kennedy is not here, we can remember him and we can thank him for what he set in motion. Tom?
Yes, Sam, now within just a matter of a few weeks, these same three men, Neil Armstrong, Mike Collins, and Buzz Aldrin, have provided us with two very memorable experiences for everyone concerned. First, back on July 20th, when they first explored the moon, and today, all of the magnificent scenes that we have observed and the remarks that we've heard in New York, Chicago, and then tonight there in Los Angeles. Peter, it's certainly been a day for history and one that I'm sure that we'll all remember for a long time.
I don't know how many of you across the country have managed to stay with it as closely as Tom and I have. We've been here watching every footstep since early today. And we were agreeing together just a few moments ago that the one thing we noticed throughout this day was the personal involvement that people had with this gesture that was made in New York, this gesture that was made in Chicago, and finally the one in Los Angeles tonight. And for everybody across this country, and as Neil Armstrong made so plainly clear, this is a national and an international and a world event that for most people today had nothing but pride involved with it. No politics, no chauvinism of any enormously high degree. And we have agreed, and I hope you'll agree with us, that personal feelings and personal reflection about this moment in history are for personal reflection by personal people. On behalf of Tom and all of the ABC people across the country who so ably assisted both of us today, we thank them. We thank you. Good night.
ABC News has presented Apollo Astronauts, A Nation Salutes, the day-long coast-to-coast tribute to the Apollo 11 astronauts with coverage from New York, Chicago, and Los Angeles. Brought to you by STP Corporation, makers of STP oil treatment. STP is the racer's edge. This has been a special report from ABC News. We'll return to our regularly scheduled programming after station identification.